Good morning and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. For over 60 years, East Central Illinois' daily gathering spot for conversation, dialogue, and ideas. You can join out on the phone, online, or via text. Our phone number is 217-356-9397. Email talk at wdws.com. Or text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Filling in for Brian this morning is Scott Beatty.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome into the best day of the year so far. It's May Day, and this is going to be a warm summer day, summer feel to it at least, here at the start of May. I'm Scott, as we just heard Gene say, filling in for Brian. He's taking the day off, doing that college dad thing, going to get his daughter's stuff and get her all packed up and brought back home. So I will step in here, and it's great to be along with you here for the next couple of hours. As always, nothing changes when I'm in the chair from when Brian is, and the fact that you can call us at any time if you've got thoughts on your mind, questions to what's going on in today's news, world of sports as well, 356-9397. Is the number. You can text us, Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357. Do have some folks, though, we're going to be talking to as we make our way through this morning. John Hall, he's the Director of Planning and Zoning for Champaign County. He's in with us at the bottom of the hour. There's a solar farm that they want to put in out in near Sydney, a couple of other smaller ones, but the one near Sydney is drawing the most conversation, to say the least, particularly from Sydney residents, but others as well, about the benefits and problems that can come with solar farms. So John Hall is going to sort that out as the Zoning Board of Appeals continues to hear from folks and make a decision about an ordinance that needs to be in place in order for these projects to go forward. So if you want to weigh in on that along the way, you can as well. In the second hour, Carol Mitten will be our guest. She's the new city administrator for Urbana. If you're not aware, the city of Urbana has a city manager type form of government. So you have your mayor and your city council, and then they give direction to the city administrator and staff in implementing and running the city. Well, the city of Urbana hasn't had one of those in 10 years. The previous mayor, Laurel Prussing, did that herself, essentially kind of combining the mayor and city administrator roles. One of the things that Diane Marlin ran on in her campaign as mayor of Urbana now was that she would put in a city administrator. Well, they finally got that all done with the search, and Carol Mitten has been named. She'll be formally introduced, or approved, I should say, appointed in the city council meeting on May 21st. So we're going to talk with her about her vision for the role, a bit of her background. She has an interesting one coming from Washington, D.C. But between now and the bottom of the hour and in the later half of the second hour, we'll have an open line. Also, it's ALS Awareness Month. It's just a horrible disease. We'll talk to some folks at the ALS folks, ALS chapter of Chicago, and they are involved in overseeing some events here in Champaign as well. We'll hear about that just a little bit as we go along in Penny for Your Thoughts. Well, what's going on for you today? Chime in as you would like. We are always, we can go in any direction you like, but Donald Trump and the Robert Mueller investigation continue to be in the news. The New York Times reporting they have a copy of some of the questions that Special Counsel Robert Mueller wants to ask President Donald Trump, at least four dozen of them, according to the Times, including questions about Trump's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, and a Moscow real estate deal, whether the president knew of any attempt by his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, to set up a back channel to Russia during the transition period when before he was inaugurated, any contacts he had with an advisor, Roger Stone, who claimed to have inside information about Democratic email hackings, and what happened during Trump's 2013 trip to Moscow for the Miss Universe pageants. These questions are suggesting that the special counsel remains interested in whether the president or members of his presidential campaign coordinated with Russian operatives to influence U.S. elections. Also, the plans are trying to move forward for the summit between North and South Korea and the proposed peace deal. One interesting item that's come out of this is these South Korean soldiers have begun to dismantle and haul away a bunch of loudspeakers they've been using to blast at North Korea, blasting K-pop music. That's a very popular form of music South Korea puts out. They were blasting these into North Korea, and then North Korea has decided they're going to stop their propaganda broadcasts, and it's all part of this deal. And one of the things said, we're going to stop trying to harass each other. But I tell you what, you get an earworm, some sort of annoying song, that can be as disruptive to a relationship, I guess, as anything. So maybe that will help calm things down as well. But, you know, President Trump is getting some credit for this peace deal between North and South Korea, and some are saying he should get the credit. Others are saying he really hasn't been that much of a factor. Curious your thoughts on that as well. Does President Trump deserve credit in this whole thing? So, also, the president facing another lawsuit from Stormy Daniels. She's suing him for defamation of tweeting that part of her story is a total con job. The tweet came after Daniels released a sketch of a man she says threatened to keep her quiet about her encounters with Trump in 2006, sexual encounters. Sketch years later about a non-existent man, Trump said in a post, a total con job playing the fake news media for fools, but they know it. So Stormy Daniels says accusing her of lying when he knows she's not is cause for defamation. So I don't know who you believe in all that, but that's what's going on, and certainly can weigh in on those things. So we're off and running here on A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Scott Beatty filling in for Brian Barnhart. Any direction you want to go, we have an open line. We're back with more in a moment on Penny. Something strange in your neighborhood. Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters! There's something weird and it don't look good. Who you gonna call? Doesn't that song sound like that Huey Lewis song? Happy birthday, Ray Parker Jr. He was born today, 1954, and wrote that famous theme song to Ghostbusters, which is just one of my favorite movies of all time. But Huey Lewis sued him for copyright infringement because it sounded a lot like his song, I Want to Do Drugs. So I don't know, you can be the judge on that one, but that's one of those movies I've seen it 100 times and I'll see it again and I will still crack up every time I see Ghostbusters. Just so many lines, and I like that biting sarcasm from Bill Murray and all of that. Anyway, so a little bit of what's going on this day in history. We'll sprinkle that in as well as we go along. 356-9397 is the phone number to chime in this morning on Penny. Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357. Last time I was with you, I also just brought a few of the sound bites from some of the late night show monologues from the night before just to lighten the mood. And boy, that turned on the phones. People were calling in. Some of you don't care at all for the late-night comedy hosts. So I decided I would spare you, but perhaps I should have played a few of those just to see if you'd call in again. Obviously, the comedian Michelle Wolf is in the news. That continues to be a conversation because of her performance at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And look, I enjoy good comedy. I didn't appreciate that. It was too vulgar, too insulting. I don't think that's very funny, frankly. And you know, and I'm not trying to be a snoot about the whole thing because you know, that's part of what comedians do, and jokes are made at others' expenses so often. But I felt it crossed a line a little bit too much. I don't know what you think on that. You can certainly weigh in, 356-9397. Something funny you came across here is a survey about people flying, and guess what? Most people find flying to be annoying. I actually am one of those folks that enjoys flying. I enjoy traveling. Our producer, Ed Bond, has got the travel bug as well. We kind of kindred spirits in that, but 77% of Americans in a recent poll say they dread sitting next to someone who talks too much. What do you do on a plane? Do you try to be friendly and strike up a conversation? Do you just get in your seat and hope that if you're not traveling with your family or friends, that whoever you're next to is not somebody that's going to be obnoxious or taking up too much room or going to have body odor issues or anything like that? And do you just hope that you can read or do something on your phone or computer or sleep away and not have to deal with anything? There used to be a time, I think, when people would just talk and strike up conversations on planes. But I think nowadays it's a little bit more like, hey, leave me alone. We're all in our own world. Kind of the elevator mentality. You get in an elevator and you acknowledge the other person there and say hello, good morning, whatever, but then you don't really want to have too much conversation after that. Hey, I'll just look at my phone. We go to the phones here this morning, speaking of phones, and it's Zoe. Good morning, Zoe.
Well, good morning. I just wanted to call in. How are you this morning?
I'm great. It's no complaints.
I wonder if it's okay if I mention another subject that you didn't...
Yes, that's what we do here, open line.
Okay, well. Okay, anyway, I just wanted to point out they're demonstrating, I hear, for the illegal immigrants to be allowed to just come over the border, and there are all these demonstrations. And I wanted to point out that May Day is a communist holiday. So this isn't, you know, this is well known by a lot of people, but... I just wanted to point it out for some people who might not realize it. So
help me connect the dots then between a communist holiday and you're talking about the migrants coming up from Guatemala?
Well, and they're doing a lot of demonstrating, I've heard on the news. They've been talking about there are a lot of demonstrations and they're, you know, and you hear about them on the border too, raising their fists and so forth, and that's, you know, communist too. And anyway, I had heard that they're doing demonstrations in support of them. I don't know where in California. I don't really know where, actually. I wasn't really. But this kind of happens a lot of the time every year. And that's what it is, communism. So I don't think everybody realizes it.
Do you think the immigrants are politically motivated here?
I think some of them are. And yeah. And then they're talking about wanting asylum, and I keep thinking, asylum from what? You know, they're coming up from Honduras and so forth. Anyway, I just wanted to say this, and just so that people are kind of aware when they hear about demonstrations, if they hear about it today.
All right. Appreciate the phone call, Zoe.
Thank you.
Do you have any reactions to that or anything else? 356-9397. Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357. May Day, a holiday that has ancient roots, but yeah, it was chosen as the date for International Workers' Day by socialists and communists. And the second international commemorates the Haymarket Affair in Chicago is one of the things it's used for. But there's all sorts of roots to it, and some folks have, you know, just gone back to, it's a spring holiday. I recall hearing, I think, flowers are left for each other in some countries in Europe. So this is almost just a summer holiday. We're going to be up to 81 degrees today. By the way, Illinois baseball tonight, 6 o'clock, first pitch, Illinois and Southern Illinois. Dave Lone will be on the call. And Illinois baseball is home for 4 in a row. They got 3 weekend games as well this weekend against Ohio State. The Illinois softball team has 3 against Nebraska this weekend, so a lot of opportunity to finally get some sunshine and take in some good ball games. But anyway, if you have thoughts on what Zoe said or anything else, you can certainly weigh in. John responds to Zoe's call saying, raising your fist is communist, LOL. I think he's saying there's broader uses to raising your fist than just being a communist. Dale on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line saying, I just read in the paper this morning, the News Gazette, about the road repaving that's mostly centered downtown and Chester Street that the buses have crushed into submission. It says toward the end of the article, it took us a while to accumulate the dollars. It sounds like Champaign is destitute for road repair money. How about the Prospect Cowpath and Windsor Road? Where is all the money going? Should the city start a GoFundMe for road repair? Thanks from Dale. Well, I don't know the city's state of affair finances when it comes to road repairs, but it is construction season. Curtis Road Railroad Interchange over by Dunlap and Curtis Road in Savoy. The railroad crossing is stopped up there for construction for the week. So that means everything is being funneled up and down First Street, which is just a two-lane road. So don't often have to say this, but allow extra time for your commute if you're coming up from the south into campus or into town up First Street. We're at 923, 63 degrees on A Penny for Your Thoughts. We carry on. A little bit of an open line here at 930. John Hall will join us after the news. He's the Director of Planning and Zoning for the county, and we'll talk about the proposals for solar farms and the ordinances that need to be passed in order for those to go forward. 10 o'clock hour, Carol Mitten here from the City of Urbana. She's going to be the new city administrator. She'll be formally appointed on May 21st. That's what we're doing here this morning on A Penny for Your Thoughts. We're back with more in a moment.
I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's cloud's illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds at all.
Happy birthday, Judy Collins. 79 years old today. That was one of her best known songs of Both Sides Now. That's some of what's going on this day in history. Back to A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Scott Beatty with you in for Brian Barnhart. He's with you tomorrow. Judge Robert Steigman will be his guest for the full program, a two-hour episode with the judge. On the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217 texter says, if Zoe thinks raising a fist is communist, she better talk to the guy she thinks is such a great president. He raises his fist often. I guess he must be communist. I guess communist, if they do raise their hand in a fist, maybe that's a communist thing, but there's plenty of other people who do that for a variety of reasons. So I kind of see where you come from. I don't know that that automatically means that this is some sort of communist thing, but it is May Day. And that has been associated with the Communist Party as a holiday in the past as well. So, I don't know. You decide. You can weigh in on anything you want here, 356-9397. In the second half hour, we'll be talking here with John Hall on the other side of news. He's the Director of Planning and Zoning for Champaign County. We'll in particular zoom in on the solar farm issues that are going on right now. But there may be some other topics we can expand to as well. This day, 1960, the Soviet Union shot down an American U-2 spy plane and captured its pilot, Francis Gary Powers. And I remember this, 1992, on the third day of the L.A. riots, Rodney King, who'd been beaten by white police officers and whose acquittal sparked riots, publicly appealed for calm, asking, can't we all just get along? That was sort of became part of the cultural lexicon after that happened, so before there was Ferguson and all the other things involving police, there was the LA riots from that incident, and there's decades of history before that. So it was, but that was one of the first things that I remember when it came to police incidents, and that became sort of a national thing when Rodney King said, "Can't we all just get along?" All right, it's 9:30. We take a pause here for A Penny for bottom-of-the-hour news. Michael Kaiser is in, and then John Hall coming up, Director of Planning and Zoning. And then next hour, Carol Mitten, new city administrator for Urbana. That's all straight ahead, but right now, here's the news. And sitting in for Brian is me, Scott Beatty. Thanks for allowing me to be a part of your day. I'm glad to be here with you. Penny for Your Thoughts until 11 this morning. Brian's back tomorrow. Saw a bunch of you trying to hop on the phones here in the last few minutes, and we certainly welcome your calls, and we will open up the phones again in a little bit for more topics of conversation. But right now, our guest is John Hall. He's Director of Planning and Zoning for Champaign County. Solar farms have been a big topic lately in some of the rural areas here in the county, so we want to dive into that. If you do have questions along the way for our guest, you can certainly chime in, though. We'll keep the phone lines open for that, and we'll move back to an open line later on in the program. Well, John Hall, thanks so much for being here. You're probably not typically used to getting a little bit of media spotlight in your role, right?
Correct. The less, the better.
That means there's no controversy going on. We've had from time to time Bruce Knight on. He's director of planning and development for the city of Champaign. Is your job akin to that for the county?
Well, same title, much different context. Bruce is in charge of planning for, you know, the city of Champaign, which is the local dynamo, I think is a fair description. Champaign County has a different approach to land use. We certainly want Champaign County to grow and be economically strong, but our main task is protecting best prime farmland.
How much farmland is in the county approximately?
You know, I don't have an exact number. The county is approximately 1,000 square miles, 640,000 acres, and I don't think there's more than 15% of that that has been taken up by all of the urban areas. So many, many hundreds of thousands of acres of good farmland.
Just a logical guess then off that might be 50%, 60% of land in Champaign County is tillable?
Well, not only tillable, that much of it is actually best prime farmland, virtually the best farmland in the world. So we're very fortunate in that respect.
So that's a good starting point then for this proposal for a solar farm. Now, just for folks who are not up to speed, there's actually several solar farms that are under proposal from various companies, right?
That's correct. There's seven that have been proposed so far, three of those outside of Sydney, three outside of St. Joe, and one midway between Rantoul and Ludlow.
But the one that is getting the most conversation is a big one near Sydney, because that one is going to be about 1,300 acres if it goes through. Is that right?
That's right. The size is yet to be determined. None of these solar farms can actually be reviewed by the county yet. We're still in a public hearing to adopt an amendment to our zoning ordinance. And then once that's adopted, we can start reviewing the solar farms.
So that's part of where all the conversation is stirring around. It's the ordinances that would govern these solar farms. First things first, as the Zoning Board of Appeals, do you have the final say? Do they have the final say in an ordinance, or is that a recommendation that would then go to the Champaign County Board?
It is a recommendation. First goes to the Environment and Land Use Committee. That's the group of county board members that have a responsibility to guide land use, and then that committee makes a recommendation to the full county board, and every amendment has to be approved by the county board.
And you, in your role, might give input, but you obviously then move at the direction of the county board and the Zoning Board of Appeals as well, right?
That's right, yeah. This recommendation that comes from the zoning board will be the recommendation of the zoning board, and then the county board will either accept it, or they may want some changes made, in which case they can remand it, send it back to the zoning board with some direction of what they'd like to see worked on.
So the solar farm proposal and the big one near Sydney, there's not been something like this before offered. Is that why there is not any ordinance?
Yeah, that's right. Prior to 2017, we had no real expectation of getting any solar farms. Then in 2017, the legislature approved the Future Energy Jobs Act, which established a system of credits to make solar farm construction more profitable, to spur the market to develop solar energy in the state. And so far, even though that hasn't actually been finalized, all the rules implementing the Future Energy Jobs Act, all the counties have seen this tremendous rush with proposed solar farms.
We're talking with John Hall. He's Director of Planning and Zoning for Champaign County, and specifically talking about proposals for solar farms in Champaign County. The benefits of putting in a solar farm, let's start there, because I know there's several complaints and I want to get into those, but from your chair, what are the benefits of these farms coming in?
Benefits, well, to the landowner that's leasing the land, they can, no one makes them sign these leases. The leases are established at a level of return that landowner decides they no longer have to worry about the ag markets or fuel prices or anything like that. Their income is assured for the next 20, 30 years. There'll be an economic benefit to taxing districts. These solar farms are very expensive to build. The state legislature is working on a bill, two bills right now, actually, to establish consistent real estate taxation guidelines. And even on the smallest amount that is being proposed, these solar farms will be a great boon to the school districts, townships, and even Champaign County once they're built. But, of course, the trick is to establish rules to make sure that we're not creating problems for the folks that already live here.
And an attorney from Meyer Capel, Patrick Fitzgerald, has put together what may be the tax payoff every year. If I'm understanding this right, there might be a total of $1.2 million that could come into various entities in the county. Does that figure jive with what you would understand?
Yes, and that's just from that one large solar farm.
Yeah, just from that Sydney farm. And, it, you know, there's money going here to Champaign County, to the Forest Preserve, to Parkland College, to a Tolono School District, to the various utilities in Sydney, because of it's that township there. So you can see the financial benefit. But the flip side here, residents, some are concerned about property values, that they may go down if they're near this solar farm. Where do you understand, because there's been some studies that have been done, and some I understand on the Board of Appeals have said, look, we've looked at other things like this and property values don't go down, and others have said, well, where those studies are coming from, I think one came from North Carolina or something, that doesn't fit the context of central Illinois, so we can't use that.
One of the studies focused on solar farms in Illinois and Indiana, and the biggest solar farm that was in that study was about a 20 megawatt solar farm. And most of them were these smaller solar farms, a couple of megawatts. And so it is true that none of these property impact studies studied anything like the 150 megawatt solar farm that's been proposed near Sydney. And so there is that uncertainty. It's difficult to... So we don't really have information specific to this scale. And yet, for this up to 20 megawatt size solar farms, there's nothing to suggest there's a negative property impact.
The other thing that I was surprised to learn, and maybe that's because I'm just ignorant, but solar farms make some noise. And that's been a concern for some people. Where's the noise coming from? And should residents be concerned about it?
Well, first of all, almost anything makes noise, and it's amazing, seriously, you know, the decibel level of sounds that you hear every day and you think they're very mild, and yet they have a decibel level that in many times is 30 to 40 decibels. Solar farms, the main cause of noise in a solar farm is the inverter. Those are the contraptions that convert the DC power from the solar panels into AC power that can go to the grid. They create noise. They have transformers that create noise. They have cooling units that create noise. It's often said that an inverter doesn't make much more noise than a refrigerator or a dishwasher. And if you look at the published noise levels, that's true. But this is being put out into the rural area, and we actually have, fairly high sound levels in rural Champaign County, much higher than what most published authorities for what the typical ambient background noise level is. So yes, there is noise. We've proposed some basic separations to make sure that the inverters, those things that cause noise, at this time the separation is a total of 475 feet from the nearest dwelling. And we think at that distance the noise will actually not be noticeable.
Yeah, I don't know how far sound travels at that level, but that's more than a football field away, and I was just trying to think, if you had a major appliance running that far away, that wouldn't be a big nuisance. Now, if it's something more like a lawnmower or something like that, I could see where you wouldn't want to hear that all day. Is it something that makes constant noise?
Well, it's for a solar farm, so during the nighttime, there won't be any noise. As the sun gets higher in the sky, causing more electricity to be generated, the inverter makes a louder noise.
A day like today, it'd be cooking.
It should be cooking, yes. Although the air temperature today is still pretty cool, relatively. And so the air conditioners that keep these things cool, probably not going to be operating at a level like you would find in the summer. But during July, August, September, mid part of the day to late afternoon, those inverters will be creating maximum noise.
John Hall is with us. He heads up the planning and zoning department for Champaign County. If you have any questions, we're talking solar farms, you can certainly weigh in, 356-9397. And the Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. Talked about possible loss in property values, possibly a noise nuisance to this. What about just that we started off by talking about how much acreage there is for farming here, and we have some of the best soil in the world here in East Central Illinois. Taking up for this farm 1,300 acres instead of using it to grow corn or soybeans or anything else, what kind of trade-off is that?
Well, that's a good question. That's probably one of the most debated topics in this whole public hearing. The solar farms that we've seen proposed, all seven of them, are arrays. They have arrays of modules in rows. The rows are about 20 feet apart. The modules themselves are about 6 feet long. The only thing actually on the ground are the posts that are spaced about 20 feet apart. And other than the posts being driven into the ground, you have some underground wiring. And then the underground wiring goes to a substation eventually for the larger farm. There is its own small substation. But if you add up the total amount of disturbance to the land on that 1,200 acres, we found that it's not much more than what would happen if homes were put on those 1,200 acres at the very low density that we allow. And so you're taking the land out of production, you're not disturbing it very much, and you're actually going to let it rest for the time that the solar farm is there. We have a requirement that the interior of the farm be planted in some kind of permanent vegetative cover that ideally serves a habitat purpose for like pollinators or other wildlife.
Oh, that'd be good. You need bees around here.
Right. In fact, the solar farm could conduct limited agriculture under the panels, but the solar panels are pretty expensive, and they don't really like the idea of livestock being in the solar farm. Obviously, that's up to them. But we think that, I mean, to me it makes sense. If you leave the solar farm with this vegetative cover, you're not producing crops from it. We have this decommissioning plan at the end of its life. If it ever stops being a solar farm, everything gets removed and the land gets restored. Different people can disagree on that, but a lot of people believe that is a reasonable scenario.
We're talking with John Hall here from the Champaign County Planning and Zoning Department. We do have a caller for you, John. This is Greg in Monticello. Hi, Greg. You're on the air with John Hall.
Hello. He was talking about the decommissioning plan. I think the windmills are about like cell towers. They've got 60 to 100 yards of concrete that go down in the ground, probably 30 feet. Will that all be removed at the end of the cycle for these things? And also, how much of this power that's being generated actually stays in Champaign County? I would guess none of we get. The people of Champaign County probably get none of that power. It goes on the grid, and it probably goes out to the East Coast.
All right, thanks.
Comment on that.
Yeah, thanks for your questions, Greg. I don't know if those are under your purview, but what are your thoughts on that?
Sure. In regards to decommissioning, the seven solar farm plans that we've received so far have no concrete in their design. The pilings that support the arrays are just driven into the ground, and they can be removed in the future. Now, as technology changes, maybe we'll see solar farms with concrete. Certainly, no solar farm will have the amount of concrete that the wind farms have. Secondly,
and with the wind farms, do you know when they get decommissioned, will the concrete come out from those two?
We require removing the concrete to a 5-foot depth.
And that's at the expense of the power company or whoever's running it right now.
Yes, absolutely. Regarding where the power goes, it goes on the grid, so who knows who actually uses it. Importantly, the lease for the farm goes to farmers in Champaign County. The tax dollars go to taxing districts in Champaign County. Now, for this scale, a very small solar farm called a community solar farm, It's true that the energy may not necessarily be used in Champaign County, but the credits for that solar energy can go to anyone in the service area of that utility, say, for example, Ameren. So the benefits will not go to only Ameren customers in Champaign County, but we would expect that a lot of the benefits would actually go to Champaign County residents who invest in these community solar farms.
And one other concern I've heard and read about is light reflection. Now, I've driven by the solar farm that's at Neal and Windsor on the east side of the tracks. I've never seen it reflecting in an annoying way, but I don't live next to it. I don't know if that's a problem for people, and that's been brought up.
Yeah, with the photovoltaic solar farms, the only way they make energy is by capturing sunlight. So they do everything they can to minimize reflection of that sunlight. It is true that at certain angles, there can be some reflection. Our proposed amendment has a very short section regarding glare, and if there's ever a problem with glare, that would be brought to the Environment Land Use Committee, and the solar farm developer would have to work the issue out with the Environment and Land Use Committee. But we really don't expect there to be any glare issues.
So have we covered the ground of the major concerns? Property values, noise, light, soil. I'm trying to see, in my reading, I'm not sure if there's been other major concerns. Wade, are there, from your perspective, other myths surrounding a solar farm that you think need to be dispelled?
Well, I can't really dispel any myth, but there is a concern about long-term. If you do decommission a solar farm, what happens to the panels? The panels would have to be disposed of in some acceptable way. Photovoltaic panels can be manufactured any number of ways. Some ways, there is a problem with, there is some concern about the materials inside that panel. Most of the panels used these days are panels that are really very quite safe. They may still be considered a hazardous material for disposal, but they really should present no problem being there on the land.
Time for one more phone caller here with John Hall. Let's go to Mike. Hi, Mike. You're on with John Hall.
Hey, John. Quick question. I know today it's real sunny out, but have they done studies on the amount of sunlight in Illinois? Because we get a heck of a lot of cloudy days here and days when it's not like this. So seems like I've seen before where people have tried this kind of thing, but it's just not enough sunlight here.
Good
so I'd
question.
I'd like to hear your comment on that.
Good question.
Well, that's a good question, Mike. We are cloudy around here about half of the days, and that's why we have never seen solar farm development until now. But with the new, more efficient panels they have, with the credits from the Future Energy Jobs Act, believe me, these things have been studied, and they're confident that they're going to generate a reasonable return for the people building them. The hope is that this will kickstart the industry and, make solar energy production a permanent fixture in the state of Illinois. That remains to be seen, but for right now, they're very confident that they're going to pay for themselves.
Well, John, we've run out of time on this, but really appreciate you making the trip in here to talk to us about this. And there is another meeting coming up on this. Is that right?
Thursday evening, 7 o'clock at the Brookins Center in Urbana is our seventh public hearing on the solar farm ordinance. Hopefully we'll get a final action, but we may not. And there'll be other meetings after that if the zoning board isn't ready to make a decision on Thursday night.
All right, John, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. And it's 9:57. We're back in a moment on A Penny for Your Thoughts. Coming up on the news here and on A Penny for Your Thoughts, and in the second hour around the corner, we'll talk with Carol Mitten from the city of Urbana. She's the new city administrator. That's all straight ahead here on A Penny for Your Thoughts. It's News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign-Urbana, a News Gazette media station.
It's the second hour of A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397. Email talk@wdws.com. or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Filling in for Brian this morning is Scott Beatty.
Welcome in to the second hour of the program, and support your favorite business, service, or pastime by voting in the News Talk 1400 WDWS, the People's Choice. Your favorite appliance store, nursery, breakfast, or pizza location, gym or fitness center, or any of the other 144 categories I didn't mention. Vote at WDWS.com. It's the People's Choice from News Gazette Media and Central Illinois Credit Union. Well, Carol Mitten is the new city administrator for Urbana. She was announced last week, and she'll be formally appointed at the next city council meeting on May 21st. I had a chance to catch up with her yesterday. She's in town getting situated, starting to look for a house and all that. She's traveling out today. I said, rather than do it on the phone, let's meet and talk in person. So I want to bring in the conversation I had with Carol, the new city administrator for Urbana. Well, Carol, thanks so much for your time, and welcome to Champaign-Urbana, specifically to Urbana for you, where you'll be the new city administrator. Your first impressions here of the town?
I really enjoy Urbana. The people here are fantastic. I've already gotten turned on to a couple of good restaurants, so that's always helpful. And I like the pace of it. It's in Washington, D.C., and in Arlington, Virginia. It's frenetic pace. And here it's a little slower. There's a great diversity of people here, and looking forward to getting started.
I was going to ask you about that. What's the appeal of leaving a big major metropolitan area, let alone the nation's capital, to out here in central Illinois?
Well, I've lived in Washington, D.C. for 34 years, and I've learned a lot, and I'm looking for, I was looking and found Urbana for a place where I could use the diversity of skills that I have developed over the years, because I've had a lot of different jobs. It hasn't all been in municipal government. And Urbana fit the bill in terms of the size of the community, the type of the community, in terms of having a, you know, the cultural resources that are associated with the university and elsewhere, and then having a government that has a direction that I really am interested in going in. Which is economic development, but from a thoughtful perspective, a sustainable perspective, while retaining a good quality of life. And then the quality of the staff people in Urbana is very good, and that's important too.
The city of Urbana used a search firm to find its city administrator. Did that search firm find you? Were you looking? How did that whole thing work? Does a headhunter come find you and say, hey, you might want to consider this?
That happens sometimes. If I'm remembering correctly, I applied for the City of Urbana job, but I had been looking, and there's a remarkable number of city management jobs available around the country, from big cities to small towns, and so I had been looking through and just very selective, and Urbana was one of the few that I had applied to.
We're talking with Carol Mitten. She is soon to be officially named the new city administrator for the city of Urbana. That'll be formally done at the city council meeting on May 21st, but it's already been announced. Some really interesting background that I'd like to hear about. You went to the Naval Academy.
I did.
You're a graduate of The Ohio State University, which we won't hold against you here.
Thank you so much.
And you've worked for the federal government, Department of Homeland Security, the National Park Service. What's been a bit of your journey?
Well, I say the common thread in my journey has been two things. One, real estate has been a thread, sometimes more prominent because I was a commercial real estate appraiser for a long time. And then when I was with the National Park Service, that was very much a part of my job, but also management. So I had worked for a small company for 8 years, and then I bought the company from them and ran the company for 12 years. So that was the beginnings of learning, you know, how to manage a small company. But then I worked in local government in the District of Columbia, and I was managing, I had shifted from a small company to a 250-person agency. And so I found that I really had an affinity for management. And my style is very much, I would say, a Midwestern style, which is to be very candid, I do try to nurture the people under me and be as transparent as possible about why I'm doing what I'm doing and to collaborate with them. So I would say real estate, which affects everyone, that's why I always liked it, because everybody has to live somewhere, everybody has to work somewhere, and they interact with places. So that makes real estate interesting, and then interacting with people is why management is interesting to me.
So how does that influence your role as a city administrator? Because you're not a policymaker that's set by the city council and the mayor. You implement the policy, but yet you need to lead in that. So
yes.
How do you decide where you lead and where you follow as you run the day-to-day operations of the city?
Well, you're absolutely right about where the line is drawn, but during policy development, elected bodies often look to the staff to look for options. And everyone from elected officials to executive leadership and staff are ideally looking across the entire enterprise, saying not what's good in this one little siloed area trying to solve a specific problem, but what makes sense across the whole organization. And when you're developing policy, it really helps to have that broader perspective, where elected officials sometimes are very focused on a narrow policy area. So I think there's a service that is performed by staff in laying out thoughtful options for policymakers to consider. And then our job after those policies are voted upon is to implement them as efficiently as we can.
Carol Minton is with us from the city of Urbana, well, soon to be the formally named city administrator. We appreciate her time here with us on A Penny for Your Thoughts. There'll be a lot of options coming up in the future for the city of Urbana. Is your mind already turning? Are the wheels turning? In fact, were you asked to come with ideas during the interview process? Because obviously Lincoln Square Mall and the hotel there are big topics. Economic development. You have the ongoing issue with Carle Hospital and the taxes. What did you have to come with already in terms of ideas and options? And what are you going to start looking into now?
One of the ways in which this executive search stood out for me was there are communities that think they can hire a person and that person will bring the solutions to all their problems, which is a misplaced expectation. And in this search process, I think the emphasis was on approach and what in the experience of the candidates illustrated what your skill sets are as opposed to what solutions do you have. So I have a lot of relevant experience that will inform processes that will help determine, for instance, what happens with Lincoln Square. That's a very important piece of property, and I was very involved in the reimagining of Penn Station in New York City. And there was an incredibly thoughtful process that all the stakeholders went through to come up with a plan that has not been implemented, but is a plan that serves the next 100 years of Penn Station, and it was informed by architectural and design experiences from around the world. I think that's the kind of process that that we need to go through for Lincoln Square. I don't have the answers, but I have a good idea about what the process should look like, so that it can be thoughtful and it can be inclusive and that it can be implementable.
So you're not going to give me a solution for Lincoln Square Mall today.
Sorry. You'll have to ask me back.
Carol Minton is with us from the city of Urbana. She's the new city administrator. You've worked at the federal level, and you're most recently working at a county level out in Washington, D.C., and you're going to be working at the local level. What are those differences like working in government?
Well, I like local government relative to the federal government because of the immediacy of the actions that I get to take on people's lives. There are people that work in federal government that have an immediate impact. The work that I was doing was very far removed from individuals' lives. Didn't mean it wasn't important work, but that's why I really like local government better. I would draw a contrast between the type of local government that I'm working for now, which is a city manager who it's a strong city manager with an elected board, but there's no single elected official that sets a vision. And when I first started in local government, I worked for Mayor Williams in the District of Columbia, and he had a city administrator, and then I reported through the city administrator and a deputy mayor. And there was such greater clarity of vision with an individual that I really prefer this form of government. And I think it actually serves the community better, because when they elect the mayor, they know that, the individual has campaigned on some very specific things, and they can hold that person accountable. When there's a body that's making decisions as a group, there isn't the same clarity of vision. And that's problematic, at least the way I view government.
You see it as an advantage, too, that you're coming as a, quote, outsider. You don't have the whole backstory. You don't have the, dare I say, baggage that maybe some would have in the politics of the city of Urbana or CU. You can come in with a fresh set of eyes and maybe a little bit of objectivity that others can't.
I think that's certainly an advantage of an outsider, but insiders have advantages too. So I wouldn't want to say that there's I can only emphasize the advantages that come with the package that I bring. But I do think having a diversity of experience is extremely useful in whoever you bring into new roles, because they bring different perspectives. And that can be diversity of professional experience or just diversity of, where they've lived, the type of experiences that they've had, their cultural backgrounds and so forth. So diversity is of all types is really important to me.
Carol Mitten is with us here. She is going to be the new city administrator for the city of Urbana. We'll come back with more with her right after this. Welcome back. Continuing our conversation with Carol Mitten, new city administrator for the city of Urbana. I want to circle back to you talked about you've had experience working with major stakeholders in a project, and you understand the process. When you look at Lincoln Square Mall and maybe the other issues that the city of Urbana faces, is something like Lincoln Square going to be the toughest thing or the biggest challenge to navigate? Or are there other things that you see that might be tougher in your experience running a city?
I think Lincoln Square is big, but it's one thing. It's a piece of real estate. It is important. It's an important part of the tax base, and I also think it's an important part of defining the place that is Urbana. But navigating the issue about building the tax base overall and how you manage the budgets through some of these tougher times, that's very important too, and that's much more immediate. Lincoln Square is not going to be redeveloped in the next couple of years. There's a lot of planning, thoughtful planning, and there's different owners and they're important stakeholders. They have their own agendas, and so that's a longer term play. And so in the meantime, we have to figure out, okay, how can we build the tax base elsewhere? And that's going to be a big challenge.
Is that the most immediate challenge for the city?
I think so. Because having more revenue unlocks other opportunities.
Where do the solutions lie generally for a city that is needing to build its tax base?
Well, you have to look at, and I don't know what the sentiments are, but if you think about land and you think about just open land, and you build a house on a piece of open land, okay, well, then that sort of establishes for that piece of property, say it's a house on an acre, okay, that establishes the value of that. But you can increase the value of that if you increase the density of that. Instead of a two-story house, you build I'm just throwing out examples,
sure,
a 10-story apartment building. Then you've increased the density and you've really increased the value of that piece of property. So I think thinking about, and I'm sure some of this work is underway or finished, about where density belongs in Urbana so that we can take full advantage of the appropriate places where density will work, and that's one of the ways to build the tax base.
Carol Mitten is with us. She's going to be the new city administrator for the city of Urbana. I appreciate her spending some time with us here on A Penny for Your Thoughts. You're probably aware, obviously, your boss, she's a woman. The mayor of Champaign is a woman. The technical title is village president, but effectively the mayor of Savoy is a woman. Does that stand out to you? I suppose we want to be at a time when that's not notable, that's just the norm on both sides. But how do you, you know, how does that strike you?
I think it's incredibly interesting. Yeah. I think it speaks well for people, you know, here in this part of the country that hasn't been an impediment, that women have been given opportunities. And, you know, in my experience, I don't want to overgeneralize, but women tend to be really collaborative with each other, especially try to support each other professionally. So I think there's going to be a great opportunity for collaboration with those leaders.
How big of a deal is it for you to know who your mayor is and knowing that's an elected position that could change in the near future? In other words, city administrators tend to stay longer than mayors.
Well, and I think that's an important piece of continuity of government to have. It's not unlike you know, you have political people in the federal government, and then you have the career people to provide that stability. One of the things that was a hallmark of the District of Columbia was that with a new mayoral administration, so many agency directors and the city administrator would change. And I think that there's a less political upheaval here. You know, I was able to meet with a number of council members during the interview process. And there seems to be, I don't want to say unanimity of thought, but definitely there's a people have coalesced around ideas about how the future, what the future of Urbana needs to look like, broad strokes. And so I have a lot of respect for Diane Marlin, and I hope she's the mayor for a long time. But I hope that my style of working will appeal to across the board, and we'll see if that becomes true.
And the city is racially diverse, and obviously Washington, D.C. area is as well. What in your experience do you think informs what's going on in the dynamics of the city of Urbana?
Well, there's something very specific, which is that one of the goals of the mayor and the council that they just recently established for the next 5 years is to increase the amount of minority procurements and contracting and stuff, minority-owned businesses. And that's something that is very big in Washington, D.C. They have their own certification program for local small disadvantaged business enterprises. And it was something that I had to be very mindful of when I was an agency director, because I was held accountable for meeting certain standards in terms of that contracting level. And it was a challenge when I was working for Homeland Security, because the neighborhood that I was working in very much wanted local businesses to be given opportunities, and working with the federal government is completely different. And there was also a huge disconnect between the types of businesses that existed in the neighborhood where we were working and the types of procurements that the government was doing, at least Homeland Security. So I have a lot of experience in that, so I think I can help inform how that moves forward, how that effort moves forward. But I also think that in the district, and I know it's happening around the country, but I personally am very interested in, and there are efforts in the district to have, you know, more open, genuine conversations around race and the disparities of experiences and opportunities. And so I hope there would be opportunities like that here, especially with a university community where you can have those in a safe space.
Well, Carol Mitten, we've asked you to dive into some of the things you'll have to be wading into, and you're still looking for a house and all that, so mm-hmm. We appreciate you, you know, moving is, it's a lot of transition all at once, so mm-hmm. We appreciate you spending some time with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Sure thing. And when do you expect to be working full time?
Early June, without naming a specific date at this point. We'll see how everything comes together.
Yeah, you'll be formally appointed on May 21st at the council meeting. That should go without a hitch, right?
That's my plan.
Thank you, Carol. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Carol Mitten with us here on A Penny for Your Thoughts. We're back with more after this. 10:31 on A Penny for Your Thoughts. Scott Beatty filling in for Brian Barnhart. Thanks to Carol Mitten for being with us there. Also, thanks to John Hall for being with us earlier in the program. We got news here in a moment. And the other side of that, we'll do a little bit of open line. I know there's been some of you waiting to jump in today, so that is coming up. But right now, Michael Kaiser with the latest. Welcome back. I'm Scott Beatty filling in for Brian Barnhart. He's with you tomorrow, as is the norm, and the rest of the week. Tomorrow, his guest is Robert Steigman. The Honorable Justice will be with him for 2 hours. I know that always spurs a lot of conversation, so we look forward to that. We have an open line right now. You can join in, 356-9397. And the Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. Some of the items we've touched on today, but as always, you can go in any direction you want. Donald Trump, the president, some of the questions that he faces from Robert Mueller has been will face from Robert Mueller has been reported by the New York Times. And also, he's being sued by Stormy Daniels again for defamation. So that's an ongoing thing for the president. The North Korea-South Korea peace agreement that's in the works. That has been something we've touched on today. We also had John Hall on from the Champaign County Zoning Board. I should say not the board. He's the director of zoning and planning for the county, and he, along with the Board of Appeals, looking to set up some ordinances for solar farms. Rick texted earlier, and sorry, Rick, I didn't get to this. Solar farms are oil fields. I pick solar farms. So there's some proposals for a bunch of farms to come into Champaign County, but they got to figure out how to govern that first. So sorry we missed that earlier, Rick. And also we missed this question from Jim, an engineer. He says, thanks for having John Hall on. Do the proposed sound levels for solar farms align with those of wind farms? I don't know the answer to that question myself, and I'm sorry we didn't get that question to him. I know there's been discussion around a limit of about 39 or 40 decibels somewhere in that neighborhood, and that is seems to be somewhat of an agreeable amount of noise that can be tolerated in that neighborhood. So that's some of what has been going on. We talked with Carol Mitten in the last half hour. She's the new city administrator for the city of Urbana. Bill says Urbana might consider cutting spending instead of running off people with more taxes, as Carol was talking about needing to create a bigger tax base, basically. And one thought she said was increasing population density. So that's some of the topics today, but you can go any direction you want. It is May 1st, and it wasn't that long ago that we heard this announcement from then President Barack Obama on this day.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda.
That was 7 years ago. It was a rare Sunday night address when President Obama announced that an elite Navy SEAL team task force executed that attack in a suburb in Pakistan that killed Osama bin Laden. Now, the operation took place on May 2nd in Pakistan because of the time difference, but we all heard it on our calendars on May 1st. And then 15 years ago on this day in 2003, President Bush made this infamous announcement.
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
And you may recall that he was doing that aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln off the California coast with the big banner behind him that said, mission accomplished. More than 4,000 Americans died in Iraq in years after that announcement. And he took a lot of political heat for that. He tried to downplay and say it was a specific mission, not the overall that was accomplished, but it didn't play well. It was kind of like his father's read my lips, no new taxes, that he just didn't live down. Now, of course, President Bush got reelected. The second President Bush got reelected, so it didn't cost him that much political capital. But anyway, a couple of things from this day in history. Penny for your thoughts. More coming up. And I'm Scott Beatty right here, too, for you on A Penny for Your Thoughts, with you to the top of the hour, filling in for Brian Barnhart. He's back tomorrow, taking the day to get his daughter back from college. Got to do the schlepping and all that. 356-9397 if you want to join us. Spending a few minutes here now, glad to do so, with Kendra Albers and Julie Sharp, who both join us on the line. They're part of the ALS Association, and this is ALS Awareness Month as we spin into May. Good morning, Kendra, and good morning, Julie. I put you together. You're Kendry now.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Scott.
Doing fine. Thanks much. I'm aware that there is a walk to defeat ALS. It happens every year here in Champaign County. But what else goes on in this month? I know it's much broader than just that one event. Kendra, I'll have you start.
Yes. So, yeah, the walk is actually in September, and last year was our first year of doing it, and this year we will have it again in September 29th. But May really kicks off ALS Awareness Month, and Julie is going to talk a little bit about that because she's the expert in ALS awareness.
All right, take it away, Julie.
All right. Good morning. So ALS Awareness Month is the opportunity for us to bring awareness to a disease which is considered an orphan disease because it can affect less than 250,000 individuals a year. Therefore, and one of the things that happens when you have ALS is you lose the ability to speak. Therefore, it's really imperative that we create and generate more awareness for this disease because it does affect a lesser amount of individuals. And ALS Awareness Month gives us the opportunity to really raise that awareness and engage individuals in helping us support our mission. And part of that is with the Walk to Defeat ALS. And also this month, we have an awareness event that we host. It's called Knockout ALS. And on May the 21st, we're asking individuals to help us knock out ALS in their own way. And that can incorporate the use of a sunflower, which is a symbol for ALS. It can be wearing red. It can be creating a Facebook Live video. However they would like to help us create awareness for ALS on May the 21st. It's our Knockout ALS Day. From the disease perspective, it's a degenerative neuromuscular disease. It's usually 2 to 5 years from the time you're diagnosed to the time you pass away. It can happen to anyone at any time, although it does affect military veterans 2 to 4 times more likely to have a diagnosis, which is also something, we call attention to Memorial Day. We recognize the veterans that have served us in our country and who are living with ALS.
And Kendra, thank you, Julie. And Kendra, I'll ask sure. you, if somebody's driving around right now listening and they've not thought about ALS until this very moment and they don't know anybody with it, it doesn't have that immediate impact type feel. What's one thing that you would challenge somebody to do right now or, even today or this week to think about?
I think the biggest thing, if you don't know someone with ALS, is you really can't comprehend what it means. And all your entire body shuts down, but your mind is completely active and does exactly what it's supposed to do. So imagine sitting in a chair, you can't move, you can't speak, and there's a fly on your nose, and you can't get it off. And you know that it's there, and you want more than anything to take it off, but you can't. Your instinct is just swatted away. And so I think people really can kind of become trapped in their bodies. And as Julie said, once they lose their ability to speak, they use, an eye gaze machine or something like that. And so they really do rely on the ALS Association and the members in their community to step up and have a voice for them because they don't have one any longer.
And you can find out more with the ALS Association at alsa.org. Anything that we should be aware of here in Champaign County, any specific event? You mentioned the walk that comes in September, but anything else that we should be aware of specifically for local folks?
I think the biggest thing is that we do have a variety of programs in the Central Illinois market. We have support groups. We're able to go to people's homes. We have lending closets. So if they don't have the time nor the resources to wait for an electric wheelchair or an eye gaze machine or a Toby Dynavox, we can help them get that. We provide respite care grants if they just, if their caregiver just needs to take a moment to themselves. And all of those services that we provide are completely free to the individuals living with ALS. So it's not an additional financial burden on them. That's what the WASP funds. It helps us provide the services that the people in Champaign, Urbana, and all your listening area really need to know and have.
Kendra Albers and Julie Sharp from the ALS Association, we appreciate you spending a few minutes with us on an important topic.
Thank you very much for having us.
We very much appreciate you helping us create awareness and generate awareness for the ALS community.
Sure thing. Thanks very much. And again, more at AL, where did it go? I just had it here, ALSA.org. We're on a penny for your thoughts. About to take our final lap. Scott Beatty filling in for Brian Barnhart. He's back tomorrow, and we'll wrap this one up in a minute. There's a little bit of a window here if you want to jump on with any of your thoughts on an open line. Down the stretch we come. I'm Scott Beatty in for Brian Barnhart on a penny for your thoughts. Brian in that stage of life where he's getting his daughter back from college, so he'll be back tomorrow. I'm in that stage of life now where I've got to get a minivan. We've got two young children, so I'm at the other side of the child-rearing stage. Haven't really ever thought about a minivan, and then all of a sudden we're looking, and they're all over the place, and you see all different kinds, and then I'm trying to do the homework on it, and which brand, which model, new or used, that whole thing. It's a little bit overwhelming, but it seems to me that all the minivans, from what I've read, what I understand, all the major minivans are all good cars, so just depends on your style preference, and I guess suppose the deal you can get as well. So we'll see how that all goes, and maybe we'll get something to last till our kids go to college, if they go to college. We'll see if we get that lucky. It's May 1st, this day in 1971, something producer Ed Bond will appreciate. Amtrak went into service 1971, a combined 18 passenger railroads. And Elvis got married on this day to Priscilla back in 1967. And in 1991, Ricky Henderson of the Oakland A's broke Lou Brock's all-time stolen base record, 939 steals. He now has the record with 1,406. Ed Bond says the best thing is a minivan. Yeah, you can see the Edelini van going around town, usually going to a ball game, for coming in here to the station. All right, thanks a lot to Ed. Thanks to our guests today, John Hall from Champaign County and Carol Mitten from the city of Urbana. Also Kendra Albers and Julie Sharp on ALS Awareness Month. Thanks to the callers and the texters. And most of all, thanks to you for listening. Appreciate it. Brian's back tomorrow, 2 hours with Judge Robert Steigman. So tune in for that. I'll be back with you this afternoon for the News Hour at 4 and Sports Talk at 5. This is News Talk 1400, WDWS Champaign-Urbana, a News Gazette media station. It's 11 o'clock.